It pleases this honorable court. My name is Billy Sieber, and I represent the Colorado Department of Agriculture and the Agricultural Commission. My registration number is 34380. The issue before this court today can be characterized most generally as a question of whether attorney fees, interest, and costs were properly awarded during the trial court's valuation proceedings that were conducted consistent with this court's opinion. The more broad characterization of this is whether the remedy that the district court provided actually fit the cause of action that this court had identified. Today, I'd like to draw this court's attention to two main points. The first point that I think is worth starting here is to consider closely and accurately what this court did find and what it did hold in its 2006 opinion. That is the framework upon which the district court was intended and directed to operate. In the opinion, this court concluded, in fact, that Chia Grande had stated a claim for a violation of 3550.113. The court provided an extensive analysis of Section 113 throughout its opinion. It found that CDA, the Colorado Department of Agriculture, did not have a general common law police power with regard to condemnation of livestock, but that CDA had a police power, a defined police power, limited by 3550.113. The court also found that, of course, CDA was required to compensate the livestock owners, and that CDA could not ignore what the court referred to as the statutorily required compensation. The court then remanded the case to the district court with specific instructions to reinstate Chia Grande's statutory claim. And it must be noted here that throughout the appeal, or throughout the opinion, the statutory claim that the court continued to come back to was the statutory claim of 3550.113. The court did not mention award of fees, costs, or interest at any point in time during its opinion, and it also didn't characterize this as an eminent domain or inverse condemnation proceeding under Title 38. In fact, and to the contrary, the court specifically stated, this is not an inverse condemnation case. The court looked to Section 113 and provided analysis of the language and the statute, seeking to give effect, full effect, to the intent of the legislature as in a way that best effectuated the intent of the legislative scheme. In the court's analysis, there's no indication that the intent of the scheme requires or allows valuation proceedings to be conducted pursuant to Title 38. Upon remand, however, the district court took this case in a different direction. The district court, in fact, did not follow the law of the case or the mandate of this court, and it also exceeded the intent of the General Assembly. When the district court took the action, it essentially created a unique or a separate cause of action. That is to say, it ignored the Court of Appeals decision that this was a statutory violation of 3550.113 and created a cause of action that had remedies under Title 38, ignoring the court's mandate or statement that this is not an inverse condemnation action, and proceeding under the scheme of Title 38, which was strictly to be used for eminent domain or inverse condemnation proceedings. This action exceeded the law of the case and was contradictory to the intent of the General Assembly. The General Assembly created Section 113 with a very specific intent. That intent was to give the Colorado State Veterinarian the authority and the ability to act decisively in an emergency situation when there was threat of disease or contagious disease being spread either to other livestock or to the rest of the state of Colorado. And this includes livestock or wildlife. You have to remember this is chronic wasting disease we're discussing. It was not a disease that is found only in captive wildlife. The legislature intended the state vet to have that authority to act decisively. The legislature stated that the valuation proceeding would be conducted with three appraisers, one to be appointed by the person whose property was taken, the second to be appointed by the Colorado Agricultural Commission, and the third to be appointed by those two appraisers. That was the
statute also says the property shall not be destroyed until that appraisal occurred. Here the property was destroyed, before the appraisal occurred. The district
Later,
judge said, I can't apply the statute because the language doesn't fit. What was he to do?
The statute was later revised in 2005 to state that in no case should a destruction be stopped or prevented because there wasn't an appraisal to be taken. The district court did make its argument that there was a before and after issue. There's no way to apply the statute after the condemnation or after the destruction when there were no elk or other livestock to be.
Well, wait, it says it shall, they shall not be destroyed. A protest about the appraisal shall not delay it. But here there wasn't even an appraisal before.
There, in fact, was an appraisal. The USDA had provided an appraisal upon which the Colorado Department of Agriculture was relying.
Prior to the destruction?
Yes. The district court puts forward that Section 113 could not apply post-condemnation, but there's nothing in Section 113 that sets the scheme up as only a pre-condemnation valuation statute. And as I said, when the General Assembly revisited the statute in 2005, it added subsection 3, which states that in no case shall a question about the appraisal or argument about the appraisal stop the condemnation. And again, this, yes, sir.
So here there was an appraisal. Yes. There was dispute about the appraisal. Mm-hmm. I gather it resulted in this November 26, 2001 letter.
Correct.
Which is kind of vague. And then they destroyed the animals after that.
Yes.
That's a sequence of events.
Yes.
Who drafted this November 26 letter?
As I recall, the Assistant Attorney General was Donna Rice, and it, as I think Warren Sackman was a signatory on it as well.
But it doesn't reference the particular statute.
No, it does not.
Your position is it contemplated the application of the statute, though.
Yes.
That's why it was done?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. The district court continues that it exercised its discretion in fashioning a remedy to determine the valuation. To take that application or to take that suggestion that, A, the district court could not appraise the elk after their destruction is problematic for two reasons. One, there is absolutely no reason why the livestock could not be appraised after their destruction. In fact, we have a USDA appraisal that was done before. The appraisals, properties appraised at all points in time, at points after. But secondarily, this really flies in the face of what the General Assembly intended, and that is to act quickly and decisively when there's an emergency situation. As an example, this statute contemplates things beyond 20 elk alleged to have chronic wasting disease. We have issues with avian influenza right now, bovine tuberculosis. Both of these diseases are zoonotic diseases and can be transmitted to humans as well as to other livestock or wildlife. To suggest that the Colorado Department of Agriculture or the state veterinarian does not have the authority to act decisively and must in fact be stalled or await an appraisal process really begs the question of how can the department best protect the interests and the health and welfare and safety of the state of Colorado, not just as to livestock, but also as to the persons within the state.
Well, I mean, doesn't that set up kind of a straw man, though? I don't interpret the property owner's argument here as saying that you couldn't destroy the livestock. I interpret it as meaning that the valuation process on the face of 113 doesn't work. Therefore, the court looks for an alternative remedy to make the property owner whole and finds one in Title 38. I mean, it seems to me accepting that argument doesn't preclude you from going ahead and destroying livestock.
It does not preclude you from destruction of the livestock. By going under Title 38 or allowing this to go under Title 38, we're setting up a situation which could be devastating to the department in other fashions. The department would have to contemplate the possibility of attorney fees in all situations, interests, and other costs.
Well, why is that unfair? If the landowner, the property owner, has his attorney fees, why shouldn't you?
Well, I think we need to look to the intent of what Title 38 is. Title 38 is designed for either eminent domain or inverse condemnation. When an agency acts under its authority of eminent domain, that agency offers an appraisal. If the landowner disagrees with the valuation of that appraisal, he comes back and can institute proceedings for a different valuation. If the valuation is found to be 130% in excess of that, the landowner will get his attorney fees, costs, and interest. The legislature sets forth that the reason for that is a landowner shouldn't have to appeal to a court in order to get just compensation. But we're not talking about just compensation in Title 35. We're talking about animals that are diseased or potentially diseased whose value may very well be zero. This is not...
Doesn't that suggest that, in fact, the statute was... I apologize for interrupting you, but it seems to me that statement confirms that the statute really only works if it's a pre-destruction valuation.
No, because once the animals are, whether they're destroyed or not destroyed, diseased or not diseased, If they're animals, for instance, in this case, chronic wasting disease, there was no viable live test that could be done. The animals had to be considered to be positive with CWD, and they had to be put down. There was no way that they were going to be necessarily hunted out for the same value that they would have. There was some hunt value in them. There was possibly some antler value in them, but there certainly wasn't the value that would have been there before. This was a time when people across the state and elsewhere weren't even buying elk meat that had potentially been infected with CWD because there was no clear scientific proof as to whether a human could get the disease himself. So the post-destruction valuation is the same as its pre-destruction valuation. The appraisers would look at the animals as if they were infected with CWD, assess a value for what either their remains might be worth or some residual value that might be in them if they could be hunted on some other level, and provide the valuation there. Similarly, post-destruction, they would have to look at the animals in the same fashion. What were these animals worth at that point in time? This isn't a question as it is in eminent domain where the appraiser might look to the highest and best use of a piece of property. This is a question of diseased or potentially diseased animals that have the ability or the capacity to infect other livestock or humans across the state and that must be put down immediately. The remedial factor to come back to an appraisal can be done either post or pre with those same factors in mind.
If we were to reverse and remand this case, mm-hmm. could the trial court award attorney's fees under some other provision?
There's no other provision that I've found that would allow for attorney fees. Attorney fees are limited to either statutory mandates or procedural dictates or contractual agreements. None of those exist in this situation.
There could be a statute that might apply here, could there not?
There could be, but I have searched for one and I have not found one that does.
Well, how about the attorney's fee statute? insubstantial and frivolous case.
Lack of substantial justification is a requirement that the court initially find that there is no substantial justification for the matter. That finding has never been.
No, that's what I'm suggesting. If it was remanded to the trial court, would the trial court have the latitude to make such findings here? I don't know what happened with the appraisal. I don't know why it wasn't accepted. I don't know why it wasn't paid, but would the court have the latitude to make that finding here?
I don't believe they would at this point in time, because the initial issues of whether the department acted or did not act have been resolved by this court in 2006. This court defined that there was a statutory violation and remanded it to the district court for valuation consistent with that finding. Mm-hmm. The Court of Appeals did not find, in fact, that there was a lack of substantial justification. I see my time is running out. If I may reserve the rest for rebuttal, if there are no questions.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Michael J. Bello of the firm of Barabel, Meinschenk & Eason in Denver for the plaintiff, Kia Grande. And my registration number is 8198. Your Honor, I'd like to clarify something that Judge Richman raised concerning the appraisal, just to make sure. There was a very minimal factual record in this case, and there was an initial appraisal that was done by, I believe, a USDA appraiser, and that was done back in November 2001 when this case started. Mr. Sackman was not represented by counsel at the time, but he immediately, he wasn't present for the appraisal, he immediately protested that appraisal, and that's what led to the agreement with the Attorney General's office that they could proceed with the destruction of the animals, but that the parties would negotiate in good faith about the appropriate indemnification.
So it wasn't an appraisal as prescribed by the statute?
No, it was not.
Picking of a neutral appraiser? It wasn't.
Yes, there was just the one selected by the USDA and or the Colorado Department of Agriculture, which were working together in a cooperative program. Also, I wanted to point out something before I really get to the points of my argument, which is that the state has talked about there being this emergency situation, which supposedly dispensed with the necessity of doing the procedure properly with three appraisers under 3550.113. There's no factual support in the record for that. There's, as I said, a very minimal record in this case. And further, in the original appeal to this court, they argued that they hadn't satisfied the factual predicates for 3550.113. There were three predicates that there had to be a finding by the state veterinarian, there had to be that an emergency existed, there had to be approval by the governor, there had to be one other criterion, three factual predicates. The state argued then that there hadn't been that kind of administrative finding by the, that an emergency existed, so therefore we didn't have a claim. And so now they're saying, well, there was an emergency that existed that supposedly dispensed of the requirement. So I wanted to point out what I believe was a major inconsistency in their position there. But really, the primary issue here is whether we think the primary issue is whether the district court, the trial court, had the discretion to utilize the eminent domain procedures in 38.1.101 et sec. And as I pointed out in the brief, we made it clear from the start of this case in our initial complaint in October 2003 that at least we believed that those were the appropriate procedures, and we specifically requested that the procedures be in accordance with 38.1.101 et sec. So that argument has been on the table since this case started in October 2003, and I pointed out, I believe, a significant timeliness issue in the brief in that the department did not raise that issue until 2 months after the court, upon remand, had appointed the commissioners, and then they asked the court to reconsider its ruling. That was 3.5 years after the case had started, and despite the fact that this case had gone all the way to the Court of Appeals and there had been arguments about inverse condemnation, et cetera, that was the first time that issue was raised. So we do think that is a relevant issue, and the judge, one of the bases for his ruling was that it was not timely. But on the merits, the primary point that we would make is that this court did not define which procedures that the trial court should use upon remand. The court said to essentially it should engage in proceedings consistent with this opinion to determine the valuation and appraisal of the elk. And the eminent domain statute itself, by its terms, says that in all cases in property, when property is taken by the state without just compensation, it says in all cases in which compensation is not made by the state, in 38.1-101-2A, that these would be the proceedings that would be applicable. So that's the first point we start with, is the plain view of the plain meaning of the language, that in all cases where the property is taken by the state. I would also note that in one of the cases interpreting Article 2, Section 15 of the Colorado Constitution, that is the private, the eminent domain or private property may not be taken or damaged for public or private use without just compensation. And SRB, CERB, versus Board of County Commissioners, cited in the brief, 601 P. Second, 1082, this court said that Article 2, Section 15, and its eminent domain counterpart in the statutes, 38-1-101, is not limited in its application to condemnation proceedings. We also believe that eminent domain proceedings were the closest analog for determining compensation of property taken without compensation. It provides a method of determining the value through either the jury or three commissioners, as at the option, I think, of the landowner or the property owner. And it provides a constitutionally prescribed remedy for property owners whose property is taken by the state without compensation. Also, we believe the trial court had discretion. Now, we cited several cases in our brief, and they were distinguished by the counsel for the state, that show the inherent discretion of the trial court to fashion appropriate proceedings. One of them had to do with whether the trial court had the discretion to hold Trinity hearings in governmental in immunity cases. I think the closest analogy, and I realize that these are not all directly on point, but that they show the point of discretion, is in Re Hill, 166 P. 3rd, 269, because that was a case where the court commented the trial court had the discretion to use the procedures in CRCP 121, Section 1-22, about costs and attorney fees, and it was in a divorce case.
What about the fact, which was pointed out in the prior opinion, that 38.1.202 does not enumerates various statutes dealing with eminent domain, but contains no cross-reference to 3551.13?
Well, 2 points I would make in response to that, Your Honor. First is that in Section 202C, large I, large numeral I, it says it's not the intent of the General Assembly to repeal, limit, or otherwise modify the authority of any governmental entity to exercise the power of eminent domain. By its listing of those statutes, which was a compendium that the General Assembly was trying to do for the, in some respects, the convenience and the, of the parties and courts and of landowners and property owners, but it was a compendium, but I don't think it was its intention to necessarily to limit, say this is the total universe of entities which might have the power of eminent domain. But the second point is that we think that listing of those entities that had eminent domain in 38.1.202 does not necessarily mean that the procedures in 38.1.101 et sec are thus are inappropriate in a case like this, which is so closely analogous to eminent domain. We had an argument and previously when this case was submitted to the court about whether it satisfied the requirements for inverse condemnation, and the courts, which we had not pled, but we did plead to taking a property without just compensation. So it's our belief that that is not an exhaustive list, and provides that it's not intended to be an exhaustive list, and that it does not rule out the possibility or the appropriateness of these procedures for a case like this for determining valuation of property taken without compensation.
I mean, this case is really about the attorney fees, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Fair.
Yes.
I mean, did in the lower court, did Kaya Grandy ever seek fees under 38.17.101 et sec? I mean, it's 13.17.101 et sec. Was that ever pleaded or requested in a post-trial motion?
We didn't get to that point. That's, you know, as you've seen in my brief, I argue that that's an alternative basis for it. And in answer to either, I think it was perhaps Judge Richmond's or your question of Mr. Sieber, we think that if the case were remanded, that certainly would be the argument we would make, particularly the originally bringing this case to this court on the theory that they didn't owe us any compensation.
Okay, but
not substantially justified.
Follow my question, which is a little more specific. Was 13.17.101 et sec ever raised in this case before your briefs on appeal? In the original complaint, in the earlier appeal, or in the remand proceedings?
I don't think it was, Your Honor, because I don't think it was, because I think that it never got to that point, because the court was going with, was in agreement with us that 38.1.101 et sec applied. So there was no occasion for us to argue that 13.17.202 or 201 applied. We never had the occasion to make that argument.
We never had the need to, but you could have as an alternative.
We could have, as an alternative argument, but it never was framed where we needed to make that as an alternative argument. Because,
okay. Thank you.
I would also point out that, as I think the court has noted here, the total unsuitability of the procedure suggested by the state, 3550.113. It's an administrative procedure generally designed for evaluation before the destruction of the animals. It's addressed to the Agricultural Commission. The three appraisers do the report and submit that to the Agricultural Commission. The commission then has the authority to submit a bill to the governor as it deems appropriate for compensation. It's entirely inappropriate for evaluation under these circumstances by a court in a civil proceeding. One of the things I would point out in that regard is that there's been a bit of a recodification of 3550 of Article 50 there, on Title 50, in that they've moved some sections around and consolidated other sections, but in 3550.117, the legislature has provided for the enforcement of the article. And it's primarily addressed to the enforcement by the commission against livestock owners for violations, such as by seeking a TRO or injunction from the district court to enjoin an action by a livestock owner that violates the article. There are also civil penalties in Section 118 that may be enforced by going to appropriate proceedings in district court If the legislature had determined that proceedings under 3551.13 were appropriate for a civil court to follow in determining valuation, as suggested by the department, we think the legislature would have so provided. But really, our primary argument is that it is just an administrative procedure that is not suitable for determination under these circumstances. One of the ironies that we find to this case is that the state is saying that we should have had three appraisers determine this. Well, what we had in the eminent domain procedure was an appointment of a board of three commissioners, three disinterested freeholders, I think is the way they state that, who were to determine that before the parties agreed upon the amount of the animals. So in our view, that shows how appropriate that procedure was for the valuation of the animals. Further, the attorney fee provisions of Article 38 comport with the remedial purposes of eminent domain or of other statutes to defend the interest of property owners whose property has been taken without compensation. As cited in the briefs, that is to be liberally construed in favor of such parties, and that's exactly what occurred here. And we are now here over 7 years later arguing about attorney fees, costs, and interest. I wanted to cover two other quick issues. One is the interest issue. It's our view, and we argued this to the court, I think, both ways, the district court, but it wasn't necessary. Prejudgment interest is allowable either on whether this is under 38.1.101 at SEC or whether it's under 512.102.1b. And 512.2, the general, what I would call the general interest statute. This court has determined that interest can be ordered against the state. This court has determined that the meaning of properties, of monies or properties, quote, wrongfully withheld, doesn't mean tortiously or in bad faith, but simply means that there is a failure to deliver money or property when there is an obligation to do so. So we think that under either rubric, prejudgment interest is due from the date that the property was taken in November 1st, 2001 until it was paid for.
Is that a determination for this court to make, or if we agree with you, should we remand and ask for trial court to hold a hearing under 512.102, and the trial court can make a factual finding as to whether there was a wrongful taking or wrongful withholding?
Well, Your Honor, I'm aware of some, and when I was doing my research here, of some general, some statements to the effect that if there's an issue about attorney fees, that even if it's attorney fees for taking a case to the Court of Appeals, that should be remanded to the trial court. I recall reading a case, and I can't cite that case right now. On the interest issue, I think that that's an issue which can be dealt with by this court, whether it's allowable. If the court finds that this was not the appropriate procedure, I would ask that it be remanded to the court for a finding on the attorney fees on the substantially frivolous, and it might be appropriate to remand it on the interest issue as well.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Your time is exhausted.
Thank you. I'd like to clarify one of the points that Mr. Bellow made. He stated the legislative intent in 38.1.202 does not suggest that the legislature intended to codify all of those entities that are cloaked with the power of eminent domain. The full language of that does state that there is much confusion with regard to who has eminent domain, and therefore the legislative intent is to establish a list of those who have the power. Notably, the Department of Agriculture is not one of those entities. It is our position that eminent domain is available only to those entities who are cloaked with it. The legislature in Beth Midrash stated that the power of eminent domain lies dormant in the state until the legislature speaks. When we have the legislative intent and we have a codification of a group of entities who are cloaked with the power of eminent domain, and the department is not one of those, it is indicative that the department was not intended to be one of those. And this goes back to the intent of creating what is 3551.13, and the intent here is it's not a statute to make folks whole, as 38 is. It's not a statute to give them the highest and best use of their property, as 38 is. It's a statute to allow the department to act quickly and decisively in situations where there is an emergency or a potential emergency to protect the health, safety, and welfare. The statute itself sets forth the remedies that are afforded to the party.
Why, changing subjects, and I apologize for interrupting, why shouldn't we remand for a hearing on interest under 512.102 and let the trial court determine whether there was a wrongful taking of property or wrongful withholding, whatever the exact language is?
I think there are two reasons for that. The first reason is this court has already established that there was a statutory violation of 3551.13. I'm sorry, not the trial court. This court established that and established that that was the violation. They never found or held that there was a wrongful taking. That issue has been fully resolved at the time that it came before the Court of Appeals the first time. Secondly, I've lost my second point. I'm sorry. I'll leave it at that.
It happens.
I thought you had a question. No?
Okay.
The administrative procedures that Mr. Bello speaks of are exactly that, administrative procedures, and there's no reason why those administrative procedures can't be used at a second hearing. And I'm out of time.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. They're very helpful. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused, and the court